The Religion of Man, Chapter 6. I had said that in our country, as well as in the entire world, the foundations of religion have already been laid. This foundation consists in faith in God. The faith is there, in varying forms though, in the different societies. But what, however, has not yet been built upon this foundation is the superstructure, the house of religion, in which the individual as well as the society are to find their shelter. The foundation is there, but not the living room. Religion has therefore to be built up. One may ask if anything more can now really be done about religion, when in spite of the fact that so many religions have been founded, true religion has not come into being. 50 different religions have not made that possible. The only religion for mankind is the religion of man. This is not yet there. Attempts have been made in that direction. It had even been brought about partially, but there was a total collapse. The foundation, however, is as strong as ever. There is faith in the hearts of men, but religion as man's honorable creed is not yet there. Let us take one example. Vasavanna Swami had taught you the ethics of manual labor. He had preached that every person, big or small, ought to do manual work. This was preached by him as a religious creed, but that religion has not yet come into being. Even today, millions of people do manual work. They used to do so in those days also. Whence then the necessity of elevating this into a matter of religious duty? The fact is that if people were or are doing manual labor, it is because they had or have no other way. There is no belief in the dignity of manual work. And those who do work do not even recognize that dignity. What does the manual worker aspire after? The peasant does manual work, yet what he aspires after is to give his children such an education as would spare them that labor. He has to work, for he cannot help it. But he desires that his children should not take to cultivation, if that can be helped. This sort of manual work is thus being done only out of helplessness. It may be true that bodily labor should be done in a spirit of religious dedication. It may be asked, but how to bring it about? Would it be enough if we all do bodily work, irrespective of consequences in this life, and hopeful of better fruits only in the next? Is this how the religion of bodily labor shall come into being? Bodily work will be accepted as a religious duty only when its economic value would be the same as that of all other kinds of work. Only then would the dignity proper to it be restored to bodily work, and it would become a matter of religion. There should be the social strength to back it up. Society favorable to it has to be built up. The benefits of bodily labor here in this world have to be demonstrated. To say that the benefits would come not in this life but in the next would not do. A professor is now paid 500 rupees per month. He works 6 months a year, the rest being covered by holidays. He works for not more than 3 hours daily. Counted over the year, his working hours amount to 600, while his wage is rupees 6,000. This brings his wage to 10 rupees an hour. Other laborers, those who do manual work, maybe the disciples of Vasavanna, are paid at most only 2 annas per hour. Besides, a college teacher enjoys the benefit of pensions after he has worked for 25 to 30 years. But what is there in store for the manual worker, for this disciple of Vasavanna? Nothing at all. How can a religion subsist on this basis? That is why I have been saying that this religion has not yet come into being. The Hindu, Muslim, Christian, and other faiths are there as foundations, but the house of religion has not yet been built. Let us consider a second case. Religion teaches that stealing is bad. But how can stealing be sinful if accumulation of wealth is not? This sort of one-sided teaching won't do. One who accumulates wealth is being honored in this world. Maybe he goes to hell afterwards. But on the other hand, there is the poor manual worker who has no honor in this life, but who might perhaps go to the heaven of heavens in the next. But we must realize that religion can no longer subsist on the support of afterlife. It requires the support of this life. Religion should be integral, not one-sided. If stealing is a sin, accumulation also is so. Both these ideas taken together shall constitute religion. There may be a religion for the individual, but it must have recognition in the entire society. The society has to be shaped accordingly. Religion cannot be one-sided. It must apply to all. It won't do to apply it to one group and not to another. It is the wife's duty, for example, to have a mark on the forehead and an auspicious thread around the neck as symbols of her married state and to proclaim that she is loyal to her husband. Is it not also the man's duty to be loyal to his wife? Why does he not carry a mark on his forehead? One does not know which of the men are married, as one can know at a glance which of the women are married. Why does not a man carry around his neck some mark of his faithfulness? A religion which bases itself on laying down duties for one section of the society and has nothing to say to the others cannot survive. I have pointed out three requisites for religion. 1. Religion cannot be founded on the basis of afterlife. 2. Religion has to be integral. It cannot remain one-sided. And 3. Religion is not complete with the individual alone. Society has to be shaped accordingly. Only then will the place of religion be assured in the entire society. The house of religion will come into being when these three conditions are fulfilled. But these three conditions have not yet been actualized. The saints have endeavored in that direction, but they have not succeeded. We have yet to build it up. We can do this with the help of science. The foundations of religion have to be made permanent, because we ourselves would not survive if religion does not. Science has enlarged the frontiers of human intelligence, but the heart remains small. The peasant dreams, "This is my field, this is my house. When the neighbor is not watchful, I will push my plow into his fields and extend my field by a cubit." On one hand, man talks of exploring the moon, and on the other, he schemes to encroach upon a square foot of land. Would men survive under such circumstances? This breeds jealousy and dissensions, leading to wars. Let us in India maintain harmony in each and every village and establish the religion of society and of man. There is the secure basis that we all are children of God. People ask, "Do you hope to succeed in achieving what people in the olden days have failed to do?" I would say, yes. For now, I have the aid of science, while this was not so in those days. Science is not merely helping, it is also threatening. Quarrels and dissensions threaten to annihilate humanity, while love and cooperation can usher in the kingdom of heaven upon earth. heaven and hell both in this life. People in olden days talked about heaven and hell. Good work was supposed to lead to heaven and selfishness to hell after death. Science shows that love, virtue and cooperation would bring heaven to us in this very life. Science is thus pointing to direct and perceptible results. If the catastrophe of Hiroshima is not hell, what else is? We want, therefore, to build up a religion in which virtue and vice should be directly experienced. It is on this new foundation that we are to build the house of religion. Self-knowledge favors us. We have also the help from the austerities of the saints. What, however, is most significant is that science is favorable to us. What we have to do is only to sacrifice a little, not too much. Turvekar, Mysore, 4th of November, 1957.